Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Barb Darby's Advocacy for the Homeless Mentally Ill. Bob Darby is an advocate for the homeless mentally ill. He also founded Boo Not Bums in Atlanta. He is a person who graduated from, I think, Emory University with his degree in psychology. He also studied theology and psychology under their master's programs, and he has been a human rights advocate for at least 20 years. We also welcome Ms. Lillian Eaglefeather. Ms. Lillian Eaglefeather is of the Lakota people and I think other tribes, and she's also an advocate for homeless people, as well as any other human rights concern. So I want to thank our panel of hosts today. This is Mary Neal. I'm director of Human Rights Demand. I want you to know that I set these shows up with 2 hours on the board, but I'm looking at the board right now, and it says we have 20 minutes on the clock. I'm cyber-stalked. Human rights advocacy is a cyber-stalked enterprise in America. They want to force human rights, they say, on the rest of the world. But here in America, we don't have free speech or freedom of press if we really are dealing with human rights issues. I want to bring to you now Mr. Bob Darby. How are you, Bob?
Hi, thank you, Mary. I'm doing okay, except for some dental problems, of which you're aware. And so my speeches may be brief. Basically, I am someone who's trying to call out in the wilderness for the fact that there are so many people, maybe 2 or 3 million people, who are homeless because they're mentally ill in this country. In Atlanta alone, there's several thousand, maybe 3 or 4 thousand mentally ill people living on the streets of the city of Atlanta, which is a direct consequence of what the program called deinstitutionalization that was initiated really under Ronald Reagan in the early 1980s, which meant the shutting down of mental hospitals and the progressive abandonment of the mentally ill to the streets of the United States. What has happened is that we have gone from about, what is the actual figure, 140 beds per 100,000 population of mental hospitals to about 14 beds per 100,000. So 90% of the hospital beds have been eliminated. And the consequence has been massive homelessness among the mentally ill. Many of these mentally ill homeless people end up in jail if they don't end up dead. And this has been a boon to the military industrial prison complex, because many people are benefiting from the incarceration system that we have in this country. The more people that are in jail, the greater the profits are for those who have invested in the prison system. About this, Mary Neal is something of an expert, and she talked about this at length in the last Blog Talk Radio program. And I'd like to invite Mary to talk some more about the relationship of the burgeoning prison population to that of the burgeoning mentally ill homeless population. Mary?
Well, thank you. Yes, there's a correlation between the homelessness and the closings of hospitals and the reduction of funding for our community care programs and our growing prison population. And that is that as homeless programs close, as mental hospitals close, as the budget for community care is being downsized, then we see tremendous growth in the prison population. It's a natural occurrence. They knew it would happen. It is the same situation that happened in Pennsylvania when those judges got ready to make $2.6 million in their personal accounts by selling children into juvenile care facilities. They sold the children into juvenile homes, not homes really, but prisons. They sold them. First, they stopped doing repairs and what have you on their public facility. They shut off the funds to make repairs and keep their public facilities up to code. And that left them only the privately owned facilities. And then they started just railroading children in there. Some kids who had only skipped one class were sentenced for 2 years, that sort of thing. And so that was their way of getting, they called it a finder's fee, the money they got paid to railroad children into juvenile care, facilities. And so they got paid for doing it. And I never heard of the people who paid the judge's office off. I never heard of the ones who bribed the judges being charged with anything. Okay, so, you know, they were left, as I understand it, without any criminal charges whatsoever. And that is the executives of those juvenile facilities, the CEOs and CFOs and even the main stockholders, they were left standing. I didn't even see their names mentioned. I didn't even see the name of the juvenile facility in any of the articles that I read about those judges who were selling kids into prison profiteers' hands. So that is how they're protected. In fact, the prison profiteering industry is the most protected industry that I know of in America. And, you know, people are killed behind bars, and the guards who did it are protected. And the owners of the facilities are protected, that sort of thing. It happens all the time. And it begins by choking off funds to public facilities. And you know, your homeless shelters are usually run, or part of the running, part of the financing is public money. Part of it is donations, but part of it is public money. So that's the first thing they want to do, is choke off the public funds to public facilities that people would use. And then when they do it, we have a situation where these people would join the homeless, mentally ill, who go to jail. I was just reading an article. It says, the woman approaching is stooped and sunken eyed with a weather-ravaged face that hints she might be much younger than she looks. She carries a frayed backpack, and when she speaks, it's in the beaten-down manner of someone accustomed to asking for favors. Thank you, Miss Anita, she says, as she follows her subject along the sidewalk and through the side door of the Peachtree Pan homeless shelter. You're always good to me, even when I stray. Anita Beatty assures the woman that she'll be taken care of and ushers her into a small lobby where other street people occupy chairs along the walls or gaze out of windows. We're the first place people can come so they don't die on the street, explains Beatty as she sits down for an interview a few minutes later. She's the executive director of the Metro Atlanta Task Force for the Homeless, and this is another facility that's expected to close. Earlier this month, whatever month this was written, and I don't know how they write articles and don't put the dates, but it says earlier this month, the city turned off the water at the Peachtree Pad, citing unpaid bills totaling more than $160,000. Beatty quickly persuaded a judge to issue a temporary injunction to restore service, but her agency must comply with the daunting payment schedule or the water goes back off. While water is the most immediate problem facing the task force, it's far from the only one. It may not even be the biggest one. So what they're discussing is the Peachtree Pan shelter. Now, Bob Darby told you of two more homeless shelters in Atlanta that are scheduled to close. This one is the Peachtree Pan homeless shelter. It's by far the largest one, I believe. Is that right, Bob? Bob Darby?
500 men and a handful of women. It does not have adequate facilities to shelter more than two dozen women. But it's mainly a men's shelter, and it is directly across the street from the Emory Midtown Hospital, which used to be called Crawford Lawn, which is between Midtown and downtown Atlanta. It's very, very prime real estate, and the Central Atlanta Progress, which is a business organization to promote business downtown, is one of the prime advocates for the closure of the Peachtree Pine Task Force for the Homeless, because they want that property. They want the development. They want to probably tear down the four-story building that houses 500 homeless men normally. And under inclement weather, it can pack in 1,000 people. They want to shut this down so they can develop that property for profit, and they've been trying to do this for several years, but because of the tireless activities of Anita Beatty, or Beatty, I believe it's Beatty, they have been unable to do so. So, but if and when they close the shelter, that will mean 500 more people out on the street every day. They have already made arrangements to shut down the Jefferson Place Men's Shelter, which is near the Fulton County Jail, which houses, I believe, 185. Is that correct, Mary? 185 people. Is that right?
I think the men's shelter holds 150, so it's 150, and the women's shelter holds 180, women and children.
Okay, so anyway, the women's shelter is called the Springdale Place, and they're talking about shutting it down this fall. So they're talking about throwing 500 people out of the Peachtree Pine shelter and 300, almost 400 people out of the two other shelters, talking about putting 900 more people out on the streets this year because they do not want to allocate the money for these shelters anymore. So meanwhile, we're building all sorts of other projects. We're spending, we have a budget of $4.8 billion on the Bureau of Cultural Affairs, which finances museums and the Atlanta Ballet and a lot of other such theaters and cultural events. But they are cutting almost $2 million out of the budgets for the shelters, so it tells you where their priorities are. So, Mary, would you like to take over from me, my voice and my dental problems?
Okay, I just want to say that here in Atlanta, where homeless people are under continuous threat of eviction, not from their homes, but from shelters, just having a bare necessity shelter over their heads, men, women, and children, they are under the threat of being evicted from that. While that's happening, Monday, there was a grand opening for a National Center of Civil and Human Rights, a big grand opening for a downtown National Center for Civil and Human Rights. And, you know, shelter is a human right. These people congratulated themselves for caring about civil and human rights by making this big, beautiful building. It's beautiful. It's right downtown, and it is called the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. And it's right here in the same town where homeless men, women, and children are living under the continuous threat of imminent eviction from their homeless shelters. If they are evicted, it's very likely that the large percentage of the adults evicted will possibly be arrested for vagrancy, panhandling, and that sort of thing. So, you know, it just seems like something contradictory is happening here. I don't have in front of me the cost of this center for civil and human rights, but I do know that for an adult to go in without any kind of coupon, the price of admission is $15. So the average homeless person will not even be able to walk inside of this National Center for Civil and Human Rights. The average poor person will not be able to walk inside of the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. But yet, we have in this country, not just in Atlanta, not just in Georgia, but throughout America, we have a culture that's got people who congratulate themselves for being great supporters of human and civil rights without any real manifestation of that commitment. They just claim to have that commitment. They don't feel it necessary to do anything about it. Now, they have King's papers in the center because King, everybody knows, was a great human and civil rights advocate. And he's from Atlanta. But isn't there something wrong with a country? Isn't there something wrong with a city when
yes.
the most recent evidence that they have that they are proponents of civil and human rights is a man who's been dead over 50 years. He died in 68. You know, almost 50 years ago.
Mary?
And if that is, I'm going to get to you, please, Miss Eagle Feather.
Okay.
But
I'm sorry.
That's the most recent evidence that a city has that it adheres to human and civil rights is a man who was murdered for his dedication to human and civil rights over 50 years ago. So if you go to this National Center for Human and Civil Rights, I believe they have some displays, and they may even have some of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s papers or copies of them. I think there's something wrong with that, that the most recent evidence that this city has, that it did anything significant about human and civil rights is over 50 years old. And since that time, a whole slave system has grown up in this country regarding the prison profiteers, a whole new slave system. While everybody wants to get out on a certain day in January, whichever day Martin Luther King Day falls on, and march and sing about him, when he has finished his course, his work is complete on this earth. It's time for people to pick up the banner and go forward for themselves. Conquer your own giants. And we really have some big giants that need to be conquered. We have some mighty big giants that stand against human and civil rights in America today. The battle is not over. The battle is not even won. And every year, several times a year, we talk about the civil rights era. And people go on mock marches. I say they go on mock marches because they're not mentioning a single thing that's happening right now that they're marching against. So they're going on mock marches. You know, we have plenty to be upset about today. We need heroes today. Black, white, red, yellow. We need people who will stand up and demand human and civil rights today. And that could start right here in Atlanta regarding the homeless while they are being tossed out of their shelters so this has their property to be a more economic, more development. You know, we're getting a new stadium that costs like, what, $1.8 billion? We got a new National Center for Human and Civil Rights that the average poor person, much less homeless person, can't afford to walk in. And I want to know, what is your thought on that, Ms. Eagle Feather?
That is very wrong. I just wanted to say that I just got a knock at the door, and I have to go to a funeral of my friend that was homeless that got stabbed. They got murdered about half a block from my house. I just got news that his funeral is this afternoon at 3:00. And it is just so sad that these people have to be out there like that when these people and the money is going to unnecessary things. My homelessness began when I am from the Sichangu Lakota Nation. I am only one tribe only. I am not mixed. And from South Dakota. My mother abandoned me, and so that's when my homelessness began. I was raised in non-Native homes, abused, neglected, and so I say I've been homeless most of my life, and I've been housed with the Coalition for the Homeless here in Colorado for 6 years. And this is my very first time. This is the longest I've ever lived anywhere. And I really appreciate my home. And because I was living outside, I slept outside on New Year's Eve one time when it was snowing really hard. So I picked myself up from the ground, and it was a struggle for many years and tears. I was raised in a group home. I became rebellious in one foster home, so they put me in a group home. And that's where they started putting us on psych meds. And, of course, we're all traumatized from what we've been through without any type of counseling. They put us on psych meds. They would throw us in a little room, a locked room that's big as like a big closet, and they had the light switch on the outside, and they would lock us in there. And when we got into a fight or when we were rebellious, so I experienced this mental illness and this homelessness for most of my life. And now I can say I am finally at peace with myself and have a home on my meds. And the world is much better when, you know, you do have a home. I do take in homeless people, homeless families. I help people from my Native American group that I go to. I try to give them resources. And but it's been quite a struggle. The mental problems that I have, you know, are due to my childhood, my upbringing. And I have PTSD, severe depression. But I am overcoming them with counseling and my sobriety and having a home. And things are looking much better. But like I said, they have a great program here in Colorado, Colorado Coalition for the Homeless. And they have lottery systems at the shelters. If you don't get into a lottery, then they give you a motel voucher. And for a day or 3 days, depending on the situation. They have a coalition. They have different programs. The PATH program, it's for the mentally ill. And they have the STS clinic. That's where I got in, the substance treatment services. If you admit that you have a problem with your drinking or your drugs, then you can get in and get housed through there also. So they have different programs here in Colorado that help the homelessness. And the people that some, you know, are on waiting lists, they have a program for it's called Fort Lyons, and they it's a treatment facility. And if you go there for treatment, then after you get out, then you get housed. Because there are a lot of homeless people that are being killed on the streets and dying to alcoholism, to murders, so getting hit by cars. So there is a lot of death behind homelessness. I read on Facebook about a guy that was opening a new church, and he dressed as a homeless person. He let his beard grow. He put on some dirty clothes, and he walked into the church and his congregation of about 500 people, and they all looked down at him, and he asked for money. People shunned him. People wouldn't talk to him, and so he sat up towards the front of the church while somebody came up and asked him to move to the back of the church. Well, he sat in the back. And a couple of people, he said maybe one or two people, smiled at him, and he said it really brightened his day, and it helped him. But the long story short was this man somebody got up before the congregation and said, "Well, we've got a new pastor, and we would like to introduce you to the new pastor." And here just comes census. Homeless-looking guy stood up and walked up to the front. And it makes me want to cry because he said, "If you people treated me like this, you know, how are you going to, and you're in the house of God, how are you going to treat your how are you going to treat God? How are you going to treat your brothers and sisters like this? You know, it was on Facebook. It made me cry, brought tears to my eyes, because being homeless is not good at all, because people do look down on you. You don't want to get on the bus. You don't have enough money to get on the bus, to go to your appointments, to make appointments. You have to look for a place to sleep, a place to clean up, a safe place to sleep. I used to sleep next to the wall next to the highway under some trees, just to make sure that nobody would sneak up on me, because I would have my back to the wall. And you see, all these years of being homeless and sleeping outside have taken a toll on my body, and now I have trouble with I have spinal stenosis, and I'm in pain, great pain a lot. But I'm taking care of that and taking care of all of my appointments, and I'm very proud to be where I'm at today. It took a lot for me to get where I'm at. And without the help of the coalition, without the help of my own self, admitting that I had an alcoholic problem, I wouldn't be here where I'm at today. I would probably be gone. So I just want to thank you for listening to my story, and I wish that they had programs like this that they have here in Atlanta, because I just feel for those children, especially the children, because I see them, the homeless children here that go to the shelters and that have to stand in line for a motel voucher. And, you know, it's just sad. It's just a very sad thing. I wish they could just take these abandoned buildings that they have. Where my friend got murdered, there was an abandoned building there. And I was called to channel a news tip line to see if they can do something about that building, because several homeless people have died back there. After you said, saw my post on Facebook, Mary, the area back there, you know, no one can see from the street what's going on back there. And a guy hung himself in that building also. He was homeless. And so it's from depression. He didn't have anybody. So I'm trying to get that building, see what they can do about that building, because the people, homeless people, sleep back there. And also, I just want to thank you, Bob, for your information, and Mary for having me on the show, and thank you for listening.
Well, thank you so much, Lillian. We appreciate you coming forward to speak on the show on behalf of the homeless, especially homeless people who have chronic mental problems or drug and alcohol abuse problems, which so many of our homeless people do have those problems. But I want to remind everybody that we're living in the day when people are losing their jobs, people are not able to bounce back from a job loss as quickly as they once were, because so many of our jobs are being done by prisons now. They would prefer to wait for an individual to get desperate enough to do something illegal, and then if they do, they'll give them a uniform and a full-time job, but they won't get paid. In Georgia, they pay zero wages for prison labor, and so they would prefer to withhold jobs and withhold services until a person is desperate enough and to do something criminal. And when that person does, suddenly work is not an issue, because there are plenty of jobs that are going behind bars. Not all the jobs are going overseas. We, who are on the outside of prison walls, have a great competitor, and that is these prison investment companies. They are trying to draw labor back from companies that took their manufacturing and their a certain amount of computer jobs, customer service. Don't think that prisoners only are pressing license plates. They are doing some jobs that you would love to have, some jobs that you, if you're unemployed or underemployed and you're a free person, you would love to have these jobs. But You can't afford to work for free, and prisoners do. And the reason they can afford to work for free is because you, the taxpayer, are paying their rent. These prison companies still get the $25,000 per inmate that you, the taxpayer, pay. And if the inmate is hurt while they're working, they don't get workers' compensation. You, the taxpayer, have to pay for any on-the-job injuries. So it's a great deal for people who don't care about civil and human rights. I want to say that you can look online for an article called Atlanta and Fulton County Impasse on Homelessness. It's dated May 7th, 2014. It appears that Fulton County Chairman John Eaves and Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed can't get together on how many seats each of the city and the county would have on the board over these homeless centers, so therefore they're closing. DeKalb County, which is also run by a black man now, it pulled out of putting in funds for these homeless centers. So DeKalb County pulled out altogether, and that left Atlanta City and Fulton County, and these two black men can't get together on how many seats the city or and the county would have. And so that seems to be a big point of contention. I want you to know that these homeless centers that we're talking about closing in Atlanta, they get funds, or they used to, the Tri-J. Tri-J. And the Tri-J was DeKalb County, Atlanta City, and Fulton County. And so all three of those are in the hands of, as I understand it, African-American people. And so therefore, homeless people are going to be evicted under the auspices of African-Americans in charge. So that's what's going on right here in Atlanta. You know, a lot of people vote for African-Americans simply because they're African-American, and they don't bother to check out their politics. They don't bother to see whether they've ever done anything other than gave a speech on Martin Luther King's Day. You know, Martin Luther King, as I said, has been dead for about 50 years, and he's the greatest claim to human rights fame in the United States of America. And they killed him because he was a man who walked the talk. He walked the talk. And so they want to get together and they want to give great speeches about Martin Luther King. And some people want to get a big amen and all kinds of awards because they marched with Martin Luther King 50 years ago. I marched with Martin Luther King 50 years ago. I deserve a ribbon. Well, you know, you could march with Martin Luther King every day. We've got enough problems, but people have marched with him every day on the problems that we have. And one of the major problems is the homeless mentally ill and the incarcerated mentally ill. But that's certainly not the only problem there is, but that's one of the greatest problems that there is right now in this country. And people want to stand around and talk about Martin Luther King and how he stood up for the trash workers in Memphis, Tennessee, and how he stood up for the people who wanted to be treated as equals for equal pay when they got on those buses in Montgomery. Those were the issues of that day. Those were the issues of that day. And I want to say to you, we've got plenty of issues today. And these same people who want to stand around and pat themselves on the back because they marched with Martin Luther King, or because I'm from the city where Martin Luther King was from, they won't do a damn thing, not for their own race or other races. When they are down on their luck, when they're homeless, when they need a hand, they won't even get together on the funding for the homeless centers to keep them open. I just really think it's ridiculous. And now Atlanta, to congratulate itself further for being the birthplace, and you know, your birthplace is completely accidental. You didn't have any darn thing to do with where you were born. but they want to congratulate themselves for being the birthplace of Martin Luther King, and now we have a brand new National Center for Human Rights, whereas this city cares so little about human rights that it's going to close the women and children's homeless center and the men's homeless center, two of them. All of these homeless centers are on the chopping block, but we've got billions, not just millions, but over $1 billion for a new stadium and millions of dollars for a new National Center for Civil and Human Rights. And I'll turn it back to you, Bob, and let you close out. And we just so much thank you and Ms. Lillian Eagle-Feather for coming today and talking. We have longer on these broadcasts in the daytime now, but we're going to go ahead and let both of you go because Ms. Lillian Eagle-Feather had a friend who was homeless who committed the crime of being poor and was sleeping outside and got stabbed to death, 7 stab wounds, as far as she knows. And she's got to go to his funeral, and I know that you are having oral surgery soon, and you need to rest your mouth. So I am going to go ahead and let you wrap up, Bob.
Well, what is going on in this country is people putting on a big show of being humanitarians, whereas in reality, the movement is towards the opposite. We have the highest per capita prison incarceration rate of any country in the world. We have almost 3 million people behind bars. And we have millions of people who are living on the streets for the simple reason that they are sick. No other reason whatsoever. So people need to wake up and realize that making a lot of noise about being righteous and about being concerned with human rights, claiming that they're doing human rights, is obscene when, in fact, we're doing exactly the opposite in this country. The human rights are being restricted. If people don't even have the right to any medical care or a place to live or a job because their jobs are being actually taken away by the new prison industrial complex. We're spending $1 trillion a year on so-called defense, which is $1,000 billion on our defense budget. We have plenty of money that we could be spending towards alleviating misery, great misery that exists in this country, that is being spent instead on a completely unnecessarily blown up military budget, an unnecessarily blown up prison budget. So we need to reverse our course. We need to move away from being an incarceration and a military and throwing people out on the street basis. We need to move away from that and towards making a truly humane society. That's about all I have to say today. Actually, I do have some problems, serious dental problems, and it's difficult for me to carry on conversation much more, but thank you for everyone who's listened, and thank you for the input we've gotten from Ms. Eagle-Feather and from you, Mary, and that's about all I have to say, so good day to
all
everybody.
All right, Bob. Bob, we so much appreciate your sacrificing, and you know, it does involve sacrifice to be a human or a civil rights advocate, and here you are with your mouth in pain, and you came to speak up for the homeless in Atlanta, and they're already homeless. Understand that a person living in a shelter is homeless, you know, because the men have to leave that shelter every morning, and they cannot return until night, but at least they won't freeze to death on cold winter nights. At least they won't have to sleep in the dew out in the grass someplace. At least they're not just going to be arrested for vagrancy because they're sleeping in an alleyway at night. At least they're not going to be stabbed to death like Miss Eagle-Feather's friend whose funeral she's going to today. And we want to send our deep condolences, Miss Eagle-Feather, on the death of your friend. Your friend was a man. He was not a dog. If he had been a dog, they would have picked him up and taken him to a shelter, hopefully a no-kill shelter, and they would have given him medical care if he needed it and what have you. But he wasn't so lucky as a dog. He was a man. And people in the United States of America do not have the rights as dogs have, and they do not have the protections that dogs have. They are less than dogs if they have no money. If they have no money, the people in the United States of America are treated as less than dogs. These people are being thrown out of their homeless shelters, but dogs have shelters in America. Dogs have shelters in every city you go to in America, and many of them are no-kill shelters where these dogs will be taken care of. One woman was in Georgia was pretending her shelter was a no-kill shelter, and she was taking up all these donations to keep these animals alive and not to kill them. And they found out that she was killing the animals, even though she promised not to euthanize them, and they're putting her butt in jail. She's going to be there a while because she was killing animals, even though she was taking donations here in Georgia to keep the animals alive. She was doing euthanasia. And so animals have rights. She's going to jail for what she did, yet we have police officers who accept a salary to serve and protect, and they kill the mentally ill, and they don't go to jail. See, she did wrong. She accepted money to keep these animals alive. She accepted money, but then she wasn't doing that. She was killing the animals. But our police officers accept salaries to keep people safe and protected, and they kill the mentally ill, and they don't go to jail for doing that. So I just really think they're doing this woman wrong. She did a fraud, a great fraud on a number of people. She accepted their donations, saying that she was running a no-kill shelter, but she was killing the animals. And they found out about it, and they're sending her to jail, and I think she's going to serve a good number of years. But then we have corrections officers whose job does not include dragging mentally ill people into the shower and turning on boiling water and scalding them to death. So they're accepting their salary under false pretenses, and they're not going to jail. They're not even going to send them to jail. So this is the situation. The people in America, especially the poor people, and very especially the mentally ill, and when you add black to that, oh my goodness, you got no rights whatsoever. And then we've got black people in charge over Fulton County government. We've got black people in charge over Atlanta City government, and they can't get together and put enough money together to keep this homeless shelters open, but they got money for a national center for civil and human rights, commemorating what? Commemorating partly the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who's been dead over 50 years, okay? And you know there's a good reason why there aren't more people doing the work of Dr. Martin Luther King in America right now, and that is that, hey, COINTELPRO was on him, okay, keeping him from organizing like he could have and what have you. But I want you to know COINTELPRO has gotten much more vicious than ever before, much more vicious. These radio shows that we're doing now, I tapped each one of them for 2 hours at Blog Talk Radio, but I looked at the clock today, and I had 30 minutes on the clock, just like it was before I signed up for the premium package. I'm going to go back today and change all of them to 2 hours, and I'm going to see if they go back on it again. See, that's the sort of situation that we run into in these United States of America. And I want you to know that that National Center for Civil and Human Rights that is in Atlanta, Georgia, the grand opening was on Monday. I want you to know that when I went downtown to talk to people about my brother's secret arrest and murder, that the Atlanta Police Department sent 2 officers to tell me that if I didn't stop talking about that, they were going to taser and arrest me. And I said, wait a minute, I have free speech. And they said, no, you don't. You don't have free speech in Atlanta, Georgia. You don't have free speech in Atlanta, Georgia. Not in Atlanta, you don't. That's what the officers told me, that I don't have free speech to talk to people about a mentally ill man who was secretly arrested and murdered, and that didn't even happen in Atlanta. It happened in Memphis, Tennessee. But I tell you, the police brotherhood, it goes much further than your civil rights do. The police brotherhood goes much further than your human rights do. And while we're on the subject of human rights, I just want to congratulate the United Nations, because today is June 26th, and it is the day that the UN has set aside to show support to all the victims of torture. So today, June 26th, is the UN day to show support for torture victims. And I want to thank the United Nations for actually caring about victims of torture across this country and across this world, because there are many victims of torture in right here in America. There are victims of torture, and most of them are dead, but some of them are being tortured right now today. And torture, like indefinite solitary confinement, that's a common practice in the United States, where Damien Hayes suffers right now in Florida for the 14th year. Torture, like having your skin boiled off your bones, like Darren Rainey suffered in Dade Correctional Facility in Florida. Torture, like being baked to death, which Jerome Murdaugh suffered in Rikers Island Jail. Torture, like being crushed to death under the weight of heavy hospital staff, like Rasheen Rose endured in Fanson Developmental Center in Queens, New York. Torture. Institutionalized Americans with mental disabilities suffer torture every day. And so does Mary Neal, their advocate. I'm denied privacy, freedom of press, free speech. I'm followed, censored, and financially persecuted because I stand up and I proclaim what God said. And that is in Proverbs 31, 8 through 9, where it says that we are to speak up for the poor and needy and everyone who's appointed to destruction. And I thank God for individuals like Bob Darby, an advocate for the homeless, mentally ill, and for Ms. Eaglefeather, that's Lillian Eaglefeather on Facebook, who is also an advocate for the homeless, mentally ill, and both these individuals are advocates for human rights, period. Whatever human rights are needed. We believe in the Declaration of Human Rights. We believe in all the amendments to the Declaration of Human Rights. And we believe in the U.S. Constitution. We believe in doing what is right by people for the way you want to be treated. And so we thank God for you joining us today on the Bob Darby Advocate for a Homeless Mentally Ill show here at Blog Talk Radio, Human Rights Demand. And we make a human rights demand on behalf of every homeless individual in Atlanta. We make a demand that they please take care of the homeless, brothers and sisters. These are black folks. Over these programs. Take care of the homeless, brothers and sisters. You know, don't just build big monuments to play ball in or to walk around and look at films about Martin Luther King and about marches that happened 50 and 60 years ago. There's work to be done right now today for on behalf of poor people, the working poor, the homeless, the elderly, and the handicapped. And we look for you to do it. That's why you were elected, not to just assign money to build great big buildings that look really beautiful. And I want to congratulate you that National Center for Civil and Human Rights is truly a marvelous and beautiful building. But I feel like if it comes down to choosing between a building saying that you believe in civil and human rights and actually doing human rights, and keeping the homeless sheltered, I feel like you made the wrong decision about what to do with the money. I feel like it's more important to do the work than it is to talk the work. I understand some great speeches were made there on Monday. Speeches by John Lewis. Speeches by many other great orators. But I want to ask Mr. Lewis to please sign H.R. 3717. That's the bill that gives assistance to mentally ill people. It is called the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. I was very disappointed to notice that neither he nor my congressperson had signed that bill, had co-sponsored that bill to give a hand to families in mental health crisis. So that leaves more and more people to go to prison and jail. I feel like that's unfair. That's unworthy of Atlanta, especially since this is the birthplace of Martin Luther King, and we get all kinds of credit for being the birthplace of Martin Luther King. That was 50 years ago. He was born 84 years ago. So how long are we going to take credit for old stuff? What have you done for people lately? And I just want to thank you for joining us today. I want to say I appreciate the opportunity to give you this to think about. I hope that you will contact the Fulton County Commission and the Atlanta City Government and ask them to keep the homeless housed. If they are so hot after those buildings in that prime real estate location downtown Atlanta, then give the homeless people another shelter that is at least on the bus line. Don't put them someplace off the bus line, but please give them another place, and you go ahead and take that prime real estate right downtown Atlanta. But don't leave the homeless without shelter. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us on Human Rights Demand. That's our Human Rights Demand for today. Tune in tomorrow when we will hear from Mr. Jenny Strozier. Jenny Strozier was a Georgia prisoner for 46 years. He spent 15 of those years in solitary confinement. He was released on July 31st, 2013. He's soon to celebrate his first year as an adult and a free man. His first year, because I understand, according to him, he went to prison when he was 10 years old. He went to a juvenile center, and he went from there straight to the big house there until he was in his mid-50s. He kept escaping. He said he escaped over 30 times from incarceration. But other than his escapes, I think that this is his first time really being out of jail, and he got saved. He was converted to Christianity in the 80s, and in the 1980s, when he got himself saved, converted to Christianity, he became a changed man. The prison system noticed the changes in Jenny Strozier, and he was rewarded eventually with parole. So he's been on parole for a year now, and I think he's doing a fine job. He's working. He's speaking to the youth about the importance of accepting responsibility for their own behavior. You know, a lot of people excuse bad behavior by saying, oh, I was raised in a dysfunctional family or a ghetto neighborhood. I want you to know that that's no excuse before God, and it's no excuse before the law to sin. That's no excuse for you to rob people, become a dope dealer, or anything else. You know, it's an explanation, but it's not an excuse, because there have been too many people who rose above low beginnings. And it's up to you whether you want to rise above it now before you get in trouble, or if you want to rise above it after you've spent 46 years behind bars like Mr. Strozier did. And so he wants to talk to you about that tomorrow. And that's the Jenny Strozier Keeping It Real show here at Blog Talk Radio on Human Rights Demand at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And we thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you. And we will see you tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here on Human Rights Demand. You know, Frederick Douglass said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. So we're Fulton County government and Atlanta City government, and we're making a human rights demand on behalf of the homeless, and particularly the homeless mentally ill. Thank you for joining us. Bob Darby, I really appreciate you coming on the air, and I look forward to you coming back next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Is that okay?
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much.
All right. Well, goodbye, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Human Rights Demand.